Nancy, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is an exciting opportunity to talk about the election.
Yeah. Well, and I should mention, this is being taped on Wednesday, so developments will change if someone's listening to this online. But one thing that won't change, which really we have to start with, because it truly is an historical moment, something that I sat in earlier today, in the middle of the night, so to speak, early hours of Wednesday morning, hearing for myself, never really imagining I would ever hear, after an election, a U.S. president with the kind of rhetoric that we heard. So President Trump said, quote, "We were getting ready to win the election. Frankly, we did win this election." That's one quote. Another one was, "This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment on our country." Trump said this, referring to the election not being called in key states where not all the votes were counted. And then he implied that the White House would push the Supreme Court to get involved, warning that a, quote, "very sad group of people" was trying to, quote, "disenfranchise voters." Exactly. As someone who studied the presidency and has worked for many, many years to educate people about government and how government and the presidency normally work, what was your reaction in reading about this and this sort of language used, and especially that last one, which is completely opposite of the truth? So to count all the votes is not to disenfranchise voters.
No,
it's to honor them. So
Yes. And in fact, the opposite is really the danger of disenfranchising those voters whose ballots were legitimately and legally cast, and not counting those ballots.
Yeah. So, I mean, what was your reaction to this?
Oh, horror. This is something that you hear from non-democratic states and a strongman government. This is not something you hear from a constitutional democracy. This is simply something that's unprecedented. And what's astonishing to me is that a good percentage of the American people don't seem to understand how very not only unprecedented this is, but how very destabilizing and dangerous this is.
I was reading, not only dangerous in our own country, but I was reading reactions around the world that people see the U.S. now as a place of chaos where democracy is under threat. When we were, you know, even in the worst of times, in terms of our government and our elections, how the government operated in terms of, you know, fair and free elections, we were viewed as a model.
Yes, and in fact, we've sort of, since our colonial days, viewed ourselves as the bright, shining light, the city on the hill that other countries should model themselves after. And this act completely undercuts this administration the last 4 years, but especially this election, undercuts any claim to a moral legitimacy or that we understand democracy better than anybody else, even though we're the oldest democratic nation state in the on the planet. Clearly, this is no longer how we're being viewed by a lot of our allies and other democratic states, and it's giving reinforcement to non-democratic governments. And they, you know, they can very easily say, "See what you did? We don't have to abide by these regulations that you're saying that we have to pay attention to, human rights laws, international law." It's very It is profoundly disturbing.
What do you think are the key things that set the stage in the United States for us to reach this point where we could have someone in the highest office in the country who would say these things right after an election?
And then so many of their supporters accepting that, because I know, I think actually predated social media. I think social media is huge there for disseminating false news and just tapping into people's deep fears and paranoias. But I think it predated that when we started seeing the other side in our political discourse as evil. I would say that actually accelerated more with the Republicans looking at Democrats than Democrats thinking that about the Republicans. So I, in my looking back at political party activities and elections, I think it actually started to emerge a little bit more. You saw some with Newt Gingrich in the early part of, you know, in dealings with Bill Clinton. And I think that then while George W. Bush didn't engage in that sort of rhetoric, I do believe some of the others that backed him started engaging in that rhetoric. And then, of course, it just took off. The ground had been kind of primed. And we saw really early on, before Trump became a Republican and when he was still a member of, you know, of the red of the New York elite real estate market, blasting, saying that the young men that had been accused of a rape in Central Park were guilty and they should be killed, you know, hung or whatever. And it turned out they were innocent. And they, even after they were found to be innocent, he's still repeating the message that they're guilty. So he's always had sort of a loose connection with the truth when it comes to public affairs, and reckless, but it was all right as long as he wasn't in a position of authority. I think what's now is it's that moment in time. It's like that perfect storm with the social media offering avenues for the quick dissemination of falsehood, a much slower dissemination of truth, a real distrust of mainstream news media, a real distrust of some of the deep institutions that we have really turned to other than the news media to send signals on what's appropriate and what isn't. This is just a pulling together then. And so when you have a candidate like Donald Trump saying things that are very reckless, they just echo. They just take on,
yeah,
as we would say, legs.
Yeah.
They can't be stopped.
You know, I was talking with someone about this the other day, and you've already mentioned social media. A reporter that I talked with that I mentioned earlier, Nate Hedgie, with the Mountain West News Bureau, who traveled all over the Mountain West on a bicycle over 800 miles. He also found this when he talked to people, that folks who supported Trump sometimes, you know, unequivocally, in other words, no questioning of anything he said. Their main source of information was social media and Fox News. Nothing else. Those were the two things. And of course, Fox News has been around a long time, the cable channel, back in the, it launched back actually in the late 1990s. And, but this has had a profound influence on the country, along with talk radio, which is almost exclusively geared toward the right wing in the country, with the exception of the talk programs on NPR.
Yes.
What impact do you think that has had as well, that you have? My discussion of this with an individual was that, you know, even a couple of decades ago, it was very unusual. Even people who didn't cover really follow the news closely, it was very unusual to hear them completely confused about major factual matters.
Yeah.
Because we had, you know, in the case of broadcast media, certainly not perfect media, but that they agreed on the facts.
Yes. There was a shared factual basis. And you might disagree then on your interpretation of some of the facts or on which ones mattered or how you respond to particular facts. But yes, there was a fundamental agreement on facts. There was more of a respect for science, for expertise. And now that's actually seen as something to be wary of or distrust.
Or derided. I mean, the elites. We hear the elites. It's also derided.
Yeah, and it's tragic because a lot of the people benefiting from this confusion and the paranoia are the true elites, the economic elites, or people very powerful. The whole idea that, you know, he's been in office for 4 years and Donald Trump acts like the victim, that's that he hasn't been able to do what he's needed to do when he's just run roughshod over all sorts of things and people, that it's that. No, you're the most powerful actor in the world. What are you saying that you you know, these people are doing evil things to you and bad things. And no. There's his main, one of the things I'm really concerned about also, going right into the election week, was how he has now set the stage in order to punish the permit bureaucracy, members of the professional members of government who, you know, have taken merit tests and they've been in office for a long time and they go from government to government. They don't see themselves as Democratic or Republican. They see themselves as committed to the mission of the agency or the department. And they're now going to be much more vulnerable to be removed as being shifted over from their status to that of political appointees. And that's also, that taps right into all these other things we're saying. Even of right-minded and smart people that I've known, they have fallen prey to this as well. They don't believe QAnon, which is really incredible to me that anybody would believe QAnon, and that here Democrats are, you know, engaging in pedophilia and cannibalism with children. But that, but still saying, no, he was going to vote for Donald Trump because he wanted to keep his guns safe. And I said, well, you know, Biden isn't going to move on that, and Obama didn't. He said, oh, yes, Obama banned 22, ammunition for 22s. Well, 22s are just like, no, that never happened. That's like the least threatening weapon there's possibly could be in terms of mass shootings. It wasn't Obama. There was no federal regulation to ban ammunition for 22s. He is absolutely convinced there was. And that shows the kind of thing that the Democrats would do. And it's very difficult to persuade someone with that, well, I've looked, there's absolutely nothing in the federal, there's no federal legislation, no executive orders, there's nothing that affects ammunition for a 22. I can't, you know, being able to tap into that, to get him to be able to hear. And he's a very reasonable guy. As I said, he doesn't believe the other stuff, but he's absolutely convinced that this is down to, like, for him, democracy is on the line.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's so alarming. You know, one of the things that I've often thought about over the last 4 years, which have been, you know, I've been in journalism for 3 decades, and the last 4 mm-hmm. years have been by far the most difficult. It has been incredibly straining. And one of the things that I thought about, especially related to the election, that I think is so dangerous on a larger scale, beyond the misinformation that people believe, is the fact of this administration has taken actions that, whether you agree with them or not, are so unusual on such a regular basis that one of the things I fear is that we are now so numb to it. And yeah. I had someone said to me this morning, anything can happen. And I just think this is such, anything can, this is such a dangerous thing if people are numb to someone who will do things. And there are so many examples, but one that relates to voting I wanted to ask you mm-hmm. about, because to me, it truly, while it got attention in the media, the gravity of it, the incredible situation, I don't think it got the attention it deserved, actually, which was, you know, we are approaching an election where there'll be more mail-in votes than ever, and you mm-hmm. have this administration removing, you know,
post office infrastructure.
Yeah, taking the machines out that sort the mail, dismantling them, taking boxes off the street. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you hear about in countries that, as you said earlier, don't have a long history with any kind of standards in government.
That's right. Any normative behavior.
Yeah.
This administration truly has been remarkable for norm violation, so much so that, you know, we're overwhelmed with it. One norm violation would have been astonishing, but because there's so many, we lose track. We don't even, the next day, there's something else, and then there's something else. I think with this election, like as you were mentioning earlier with President Trump saying, well, I won the election. That's another thing that just takes the breath away. That all of us should be very fearful of what that means when you have a chief executive who absolutely refuses to accept at the get-go the legitimacy of any outcome that does not have him winning re-election, both in electoral college and popular vote, that he absolutely will reject he'll reject that.
Yeah.
And that delegitimizes and destabilizes the entire Democratic process.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know about the Democratic, what's called the Democratic bargain, which is that in a democracy, if you have fair and free elections, if they're fair and free, then you accept the losing side will accept the outcome. And that's what you had Democrats doing in 2000. They weren't happy about it, but they accepted the outcome, even though their candidate had won the majority vote. And there was really extremely close votes in Florida. And it was the Florida Supreme Court said, let's, under the state constitution, we're going to go ahead with recounts. And it was the U.S. Supreme Court who came in then by a 5-4 vote and stopped the recounts. And that resulted in the win of the Republican Party. But the Democrats even then said, We don't completely agree with the outcome, obviously, but we accept that this is the president of the United States. That's the Democratic bargain. If you accept the legitimacy of the process, and even there, I think the courts really had no grounds intervening. I think it should have gone under the Constitution to the House of Representatives, which would have had the same outcome because the Republicans dominated the House delegations at that time. Nevertheless, if it's this whole destabilizing, I'm not going to accept the outcome if I don't win.
Well, it is truly remarkable, and I'm glad you mentioned the courts because this does relate to our current situation right now. And I wanted to quickly ask you about this. This is another thing that more than ever, some people are saying now is we're at a crisis point in terms of this, the Supreme Court. And Pennsylvania, of course, had a case where the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said that they agreed with election regulators who wanted to make sure all the votes were counted. That, in other words, within
illegitimate to count votes.
No, within 3 days of the election, we will allow the vote to be counted within 3 days. So also it was a short window. It was only 3 days. And the Supreme Court of the United States, the only reason that wasn't overturned, it appears, is that there were 8 justices because it was a 4-4 decision. And Trump, of course, wants to take this back to the Supreme Court to prevent those votes from being being counted. What does that do? That threat to the fact that our courts now are maybe seen by many people as partisan.
Yep. And I think I believe with Bush versus Gore. I think Roberts has made an effort to secure some of the institutional legitimacy of the court in some of these rulings on election law, but I'm that's part of the process. That's part of what I mean by the democracy truly is at stake. The Democratic bargain has broken down. The separation of powers, that you have the different branches of government checking each other to ensure that there's a balance. Federalism has been undermined. There's on so many levels. What we're finding is that the very processes that the framers carefully put into place to ensure that power was not centralized in the hand of a would-be monarch or would-be despot, those have been eroded, starting 4 years ago. But they've really accelerated this last number of months. And some observers thought, well, the pandemic will be a wake-up call. We have to have a national response to something like this. It's not a state-by-state, city-by-city response that will really address a national pandemic, an international pandemic. And without anything, we thought, well, maybe people will start to realize the importance of government action, how it saves lives. You know, you have to respect science. You have to respect medicine. And instead, you've got these the more fearful and paranoid, I would say, voices actually prevailing, and therefore people willingly giving up freedom and saying that they're doing it in the name of freedom. and it's a mind-boggling twist of language and belief, but I really do believe it's a constitutional crisis. I think you're absolutely, or you're, the people you've spoken with, I think that's absolutely true.
You know, one final question that I wanted to ask you, because it transcends any particular president or really any election, that I think is so crucial, is we've talked to some degree in the country as having a dialogue to some degree about voter suppression. But one of the things that we really haven't addressed, and I fear that it will just be forgotten until the next election comes around and then it'll come up again, is that some people view what happened in various states, most notably Georgia, this year, as clear, outrageous voter suppression, that polling places were restricted to the point where people were waiting in line for 8, 9, 10 hours.
And that's after driving for hours to a polling place.
Yeah, and it happened not once, but twice in the primary, and then again in the early days of the general election. And when I watched that on television, I have to tell you, I was embarrassed. I was so embarrassed that people around the world would see that Americans are waiting, being asked to wait in line for 8 hours to vote. Is that a fair and free election? I mean, what do you think?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And of course, the people least able to wait that long are people who have one or two jobs because they're minimum wage jobs, or they don't have someone to watch the kids. And so they're trying to do it. They're trying to cobble together a time and they can go and cast their ballot, and it's just not possible. So there's people that didn't even get in that line, or that only stayed for the first hour or two, because life intervened. They didn't have the luxury of waiting 8 hours, even though they may have desperately wanted to vote. I agree with you. I think voter suppression is a real serious issue in the United States. I think it's just gotten worse and worse as we've seen things like, with the with the decision by the Supreme Court that the Voting Rights Act wasn't necessary anymore. So it's very easy now to pass for state legislatures that want to do it, to pass the kind of measures that will severely limit the franchise. And so you have things like in Florida, the call, yes, we decided we as a people want to see that felons who have served their time and they're now out in the community, that they regain their membership in the community by being able to cast their ballot. And then, of course, the government deciding, no, you have to first pay your fines, and then making it very difficult to figure out even how to go about paying your fines.
Yeah.
What did you owe and to whom? And it's, those are the kind of things that if you only hear about it in passing, you think, well, yeah, felons shouldn't be able to vote. No, this is just, these are active voter suppression efforts. Gerrymandering to the degree that we have now is another voter suppression method. This has become institutionalized now, and the courts, I am worried that the federal courts are not going to be as willing as they have been in the past to step in and ensure that truly every vote does matter.
Every vote does matter. Good way to end our conversation.
Well, thank you for calling, and I'm really cautiously optimistic that there will be some brave souls in government, and on the I'm such a fan of the news media, and especially KRWG and the NPR, that there will be efforts to really continue to report and for us to continue to follow the news and to take our democracy seriously. This isn't something that's just going to last without our due diligence and without every one of us ensuring the Constitution is secure.
Nancy, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Nancy Baker is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Government at New Mexico State University. I missed you on election night. We used to have fun talking live on the air during election night.
I was thinking about that when I was at the polls. Yes, yesterday working the polls. Well, you just take care. Thanks for the call.